Hello, I'm Lina Ahmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Experts say about 5 billion people worldwide do not have access to safe, affordable surgical care. A significant proportion live in sub-Saharan Africa, where up to 50% of the population are children. They say access to safe pediatric surgery remains a challenge on the continent, and more needs to be done to address the issue. For more on the subject, I spoke with Dr. Tihitena Negusi-Mamo, the Global Clinical Director at LifeBox and the Clinical Lead for the Smile Train LifeBox Safe Surgery and Anesthesia Initiative. Take a listen. Dr. Tihitena Negusi, thank you so much for joining us. You are the director of LifeBox, a nonprofit organization that aims to make surgeries safer in low-resource settings. How do you assess access to safe pediatric surgery in Africa?
In Africa, a majority of the population is young age, basically in pediatrics age group. And unfortunately, the attention given for surgery is less compared to infectious diseases, assuming that it's costly and availing things is difficult. So when it comes to children, they are not able to care for themselves. They rely on their parents as well as the society. So not getting the adequate resource makes them to be neglected and not getting the access on time. That's why most of the time the patients come late and complicated.
What does a safe surgery entail? There are many moving parts, but what will be considered a safe surgery?
Safe surgery means preventing preventable causes of complications after surgery. Surgery is not a thing without complications, but if you address human error as well as system error, 50% of the complication can be easily avoided. So that's why I'm stressing on safer practices.
What are some of the most pressing needs when it comes to children surgery?
Children are not small adults, so they need special type of care and management. People specialized in that area should be there to avail the necessary service for these kids. When I say human resource, unfortunately, there is significant gap both in surgical field and anesthesia field for serving the kids with surgical conditions. And when it comes to resources, some of the resources which are made for adults are not fit enough for children to be cared, including monitoring devices, treatment, fluids, or others. Those things results in a significant compromisation in the care of kids.
You know, a lot of times we talk about surgeries, but we don't talk enough about anesthesia, which is such a critical part of surgery. What are some of the challenges that arise around anesthesia?
Anesthesia is a type of field which is basically needed for making patients not to feel pain, to be sleepy whenever the surgery is done, as well as whenever there is a need, the muscle to be relaxed enough so that the surgery is smooth. And when it comes to that, there is a special area of properly monitoring because the patients are already sleepy and not controlling their airway or vital signs. So proper follow-up is mandatory with adequate and important equipment. And additionally, when it comes to care, the professionals who's following these patients should be having adequate skill in monitoring these patients. And it would be significantly important when it comes to pediatrics or critical ill patients in neurosurgical fields as well as cardiac patients and also others. And also some of the resources like the needed drugs, the pain controlling drugs and the relaxing drugs. When it comes to resource limited areas, they are not available on demand and they are not good enough to be easily administered for all patients. So the challenges of having not non-skilled professionals here and there, no adequate drugs on the anesthesia field, not having appropriate monitoring devices in the area, makes the anesthesia service significantly compromised.
SmileTrain has announced the Safe Surgery and Anesthesia Initiative in partnership with Lifebox, aiming to make surgery safer in low-resource settings. Tell us more about the initiative. What does it look like?
SmileTrain is a non-governmental organization which envisions in making quality and safe care for CLEF patients in particular, but all pediatric patients in general. And when it comes to LifeWorks, the vision is to make surgery and anesthesia safer globally, and especially in resource-limited areas. Fortunately, the vision is more or less shared. So the initiative is established because of that in 2020. And this Safe Surgery and Anesthesia initiative is basically working on addressing the gaps on tools as well as human resource capacities. So the tools and the capacities will be helpful in filling the gap by availing the devices in the needy sites and also delivering trainings whenever the need arises. So when WHO started the Safe Surgery vision in 2008 and developed the WHO Surgical Safety Checklist, one of the important tools which should not be missed in surgical patient care was pulse oximetry. So one of the gaps this initiative wants to fill is availing this pulse oximetry in the area of need.
Talk to us about implementing this project. What is the projections? What country will participate? Where will you be deploying this resource?
The initiative is basically a multi-year initiative. It won't be time limited, but definitely, whenever you are developing a strategic plan, you would just set it for the next 3 years or something like that. So in the next 3 years, the plan of the initiative is at least to distribute this co-branded pulse oximetry in at least 20 countries. Around 11,000 pulse oximetries are planned to be distributed and started to be distributed right now. By that, we are planning to address the safety of close to 14 million population who are accessing surgery in those areas. So not limited to, but starting from some of the countries are Kenya, Rwanda, Somaliland, Senegal, Madagascar, El Salvador, Ecuador, Laos. So representing Africa, South America, as well as Asia.
Where does the process start for this initiative to be implemented in a country?
The most important thing that we follow is the World Bank classification of law and the income of the countries. So we basically want to address low resources setups because it is mostly obvious that they are the one who is having this deficiency of the equipment. And additionally, whenever any initiative is started or any work is started in by this initiative, we want to have someone on the ground working in those countries because those are the individuals who will identify the real gap and the benefit of having those kind of tools or trainings. So we believe in partnership. And when we partner, it's not only the organizations which partner, it is also the clinicians working in the ground are part of the partnership working with us.
What sorts of surgeries will be made available?
By this initiative, we are trying to address all pediatric surgical patients, and some specific emphasis might be given for cleft palate and cleft lip patients, that all pediatric surgery patients will be addressed by the benefit of this initiative.
As the clinical lead of the initiative, what will a successful project look like for you?
Even if access is one of the issues to be addressed in low resource setups, if you are availing the access of surgery for patients without a safety measure, it's just causing a harm and benefiting the patient. So as the clinical lead of this initiative, I want to make sure that every service is delivered for the patients should be in a safe and quality way. So in order to address that, we will try to look for colleagues who will identify the gaps there. So if it is training, we will have the training. If it is tools, we will try to distribute the tools as much as possible. So those are the ways we are addressing the problem.
You mentioned the cleft lip palate. How much of a problem is it?
Based on the congenital anomaly registry worldwide, it is one of the commonest congenital anomaly. Fortunately, it is visible to diagnose unless it is isolated cleft palate. So, the care might be difficult to get on time because of some taboo or social issues in the area, but it is easily diagnosed by the parents, the community health workers, as well as the medical professionals. And it is common, just like the cardiac anomalies and others worldwide.
Do you think there have been some progress in terms of addressing cleft lip palate? Because it's been dealt with for many, many years. What is the status now in terms of understanding of this condition and also treatment?
Definitely cleft palate and lip surgery is one of the surgery which needs good anesthesia care and dedicated surgical care, because it is the area where both surgeons and anesthesia are working in the mouth area. So it is one of the challenging area. And starting from the Smile Prince work worldwide, it has to be addressed by creating awareness, collaborating with surgeons on those fields so that they can identify the patient and upgrade the services, either by campaign or by distributing the necessary equipment in the area of surgery. So compared to like 10 or 11 years back, now there is a good service getting by these individuals or patients, and there is a good outcome on the operated patients.
Is there anything else you would like to add, whether it's about this specific initiative or your work in general in terms of providing children with the proper surgeries?
For all my colleagues, what I'm advising is definitely patients deserve to have surgical services whenever they need it. But as much as possible, we have to develop our teamwork to make sure that safe practices is entertained everywhere, and so that our surgical service is not causing harm, rather it is benefiting our society or our patients.
Dr. Tihitana Negusi, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Leonard.
That was Dr. Tihitana Negusi Mamo, Global Clinical Director at Lifebox and the clinical lead for the Smile Train Lifebox Safe Surgery and Anesthesia Initiative. Now get this. Why would the smell of a baby's head calm men but rile women? Researchers say it may be another example of how we are more animal than we like to think.
A chemical signal coming off babies' heads calms men but riles women. That's what a study in the journal Science Advances found. Researchers say it may be a chemical defense system we inherited from our animal ancestors, making women more likely to defend their babies and men less likely to kill them. The chemical is called hexadecanol, or hex, and there's a lot of it coming off of babies' heads. Scientists tested people's reactions to it using a rigged game that's designed to aggravate them. When players won, they got to blast their opponent with a loud noise. The louder the noise, the higher the scientists rated the player's aggression level. The players didn't know it, but there was no opponent. They were playing against a computer all along. When men took a whiff of hex before they played, their blasts were quieter than blasts from men who did not. But women who smelled hex blasted louder than women who did not. In animals, the scientists said, female aggression is usually aimed at defending their young, while male aggression is often directed at the offspring themselves. So a chemical that revs up women and calms down men could help babies survive. Scientists have more tests to do before they're fully convinced, but there's growing evidence that smells affect us more than we might think, and that we're more animal than we'd like to admit.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including reaction to former President Donald Trump's return to Washington, D.C. for his first major political and policy address since he left office. His appearance comes in light of new evidence from the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol attack. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America. Hi, I'm Kim Lewis, inviting you to listen every weekend as a panel of VOA and Washington-based journalists discuss the week's top domestic and international news stories on Issues in the News. Drawing on VOA correspondents and sources from the White House, Capitol Hill, and elsewhere, we'll bring you the inside story from Washington. That's Issues in the News every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Health Chat. We turn now to abortion. The U.S. Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade and end the constitutional right to an abortion has raised concerns regarding women's health and reproductive rights. Every year, 47,000 women in the world die as a result of unsafe abortion, according to the International Federation of Gynecology and Obstetrics. Groups that oppose abortion have welcomed the decision of the U.S. Supreme Court. Let's go to Kenya, where anti-abortion groups perceive the U.S. anti-abortion ruling as a milestone, while abortion rights supporters fear it could further restrict the reproductive health of girls and women. Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Anti-abortion groups in mainly Christian Kenya celebrated the U.S. Supreme Court's overturning of the right to abortion in June, calling it a divine intervention.
Abortion is murder, and the abortionists are also murderers. So when I see that the Supreme Court is choosing life, that is the way to go.
Kenya has upheld the right to abortion, but only for health reasons, leading many women to seek unsafe, illegal abortions on demand. After watching her friend bleed to death from one such abortion in Nairobi, 20-year-old Diana, not her real name, sought professional help when she wanted an abortion.
I went to a good clinic and the doctor took me through the process. Now I'm fine, as you can see. I'm all well. I'm healthy and I don't have any complications.
But like many abortion rights supporters in Africa, Diana worries the U.S. top court's overturning the abortion right could encourage more legal restrictions in Kenya and lead to more deaths. The World Health Organization says 75% of abortions in Africa are unsafe. Kenya's Ministry of Health estimates 2,600 women and girls die each year from complications related to unsafe abortions. That is 35% of all maternal deaths.
There is a high rate of maternal deaths resulting due to unsafe abortions because these women are denied the right to have the safe abortion services.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump restricted funding to developing countries' reproductive health as part of the so-called gag rule against abortion. Abortion rights campaigners say that was the first sign that more action will be needed to protect the right at home.
While the U.S. has been very generous in supporting our health systems, we must be more proactive ourselves and have the right laws, the right practices that favor access to reproductive health, including abortion care.
Kenya has gradually liberalized its abortion laws to allow, in 2019, termination for sexual violence. A judge ruled in March this year that abortion care is a constitutional right and even cited the U.S. Supreme Court Roe v. Wade decision that was then overturned in June. That ruling is being challenged, and Kenya's abortion rights advocates worry the U.S. change in law might affect the final decision. Juma Majanga for VOA News, Nairobi.
We asked your opinion on abortion. Are you for or against it? Here are some reactions from Nigeria.
Why will you go and commit abortion? Why will you kill? Abortion is murder to me. So why killing? If you know you don't want the child, why going into such a thing for you to get pregnant at the first time?
But if you now talk of the area of maybe the pregnancy is putting the
woman at risk. Maybe that is on earth ground. Yes, that can be done. Her, as a person, I believe that God understands that.
A family that goes to sleep and they get robbed by armed robbers. And they not only rob, they rape their daughter. Now, the daughter finds out that she's pregnant. Her dream shattered, education to a halt. I think there are many reasons why she should opt for that option.
It's a no-no. I have two principles why I say it's a no-no. The art of sex, as it were, either by fornication or by marital blessing, is what may be prohibited. But the child, pregnancy is a blessing by all standards.
It's going to encourage a lot of premarital sex. As adults, you know, I think as an adult, there are protective measures for this, for unwanted pregnancy. So I don't see any need for people to allow themselves to get pregnant, unwanted pregnancy. And at the end of the day, you want to abort it. It's not nice.
Women should have the entire and sole right to be able to choose for themselves what they want, either to abort or to keep the baby.
Dr. Abebe Shibru is country director for MSI Reproductive Choices in Ethiopia, an international non-governmental organization aiming to deliver sexual and reproductive health care for all. She spoke with VOA's Eden Gramu about some challenges and what can be done.
In Ethiopia context, you know, unsafe abortion is one of the reasons, you know, for maternal mortality. Now, if you want to avert this situation, we have to make sure that women have got, you know, adequate information, plus access to family planning services. The United government gave us, you know, other partner organization, the financial support. But now I'm considering these new rules endorsed by the Supreme Court might have its own impact. The United government might exercise a precondition in order to provide, you know, support, particularly for family planning and sexual reproductive health services. Before the GAG rule, we were able to provide, you know, services for more than 2 million women in different parts of the countries. At that time, you know, we have been, you know, one of the recipients of, you know, USAID funding. So that enabled us to provide choices, particularly in the remotest part of the country where 85% of the people are residing. After the GAG rule, we were not eligible to get, you know, USAID funding. So because of that, our capacity was limited and we have reduced our reach by 40%. So we have been supported by the USAID government. We were able to provide services for millions of women in Ethiopia. So now, on top of this GAG rule, this is a new endorsed article by the Supreme Court will exacerbate the problem that we are facing, particularly in reaching those people who have been deprived of their rights because of lack of resources. So it exacerbates, you know, the problem that we're facing. So because of that, we're anticipating, you know, the unsafe abortion will be continue and it will be rising. So that will be ending in maternal mortality. So this is a problem that we're anticipating because of the new law, which is, you know, endorsed by the Supreme Court. As a grassroots, you know, civic society in Ethiopia context, we are, you know, recommending, you know, just for a concerted effort, particularly under the advocacy agenda, because, you know, this is, you know, related with the human rights and women's rights, actually. So we have to fight such kind of, you know, policy enactment, which is in the expense of women's life. So we are recommending, you know, the international community, they have to listen to us, those organizations who are really fighting maternal mortality in different parts of the continent, in Africa, of course, in Ethiopia as well. So my recommendation isn't just to have, you know, a global agenda, to make this a global agenda. We have to advocate for that. And the second one is, you know, we have to show, you know, the impact. What will be the impact that we are expecting because of lack of support that we supposed to get, you know, from different donors. And the third one is, you know, just we have to continue our alliance with donors, with countries which already providing, you know, support to organizations, you know, like MariSops and other organizations who have been working in maternal and child health, you know, particularly on sexual reproductive health and family planning services. So these are the main three recommendations which I would like to make, you know, as one of the critical way forward.
That was Dr. Abebe Shibru, country director for MSI Reproductive Choices in Ethiopia. And now the World Health Organization is urging people who may have been exposed to or may be at risk of monkeypox to get vaccinated against the disease as a preventive measure. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Since it declared monkeypox a global health threat last week, the World Health Organization says the disease has continued to spread around the world, with cases topping 16,000 in at least 75 countries. The WHO says the outbreak is mainly concentrated among men who have sex with men, especially those with multiple sexual partners. It warns against stigmatizing a whole group of people, as this could cause the outbreak to accelerate exponentially by driving the disease underground. The WHO technical leader on monkeypox, Rosamund Lewis, says the outbreak can be stopped with the right strategies in the right groups. She says mass vaccination is not required, but the WHO recommends vaccination for those who have been exposed or are at risk.
When someone is vaccinated, it takes several weeks for the immune response to be generated by the body. And so it's not something you can be vaccinated one day and be protected the next. You need to give it some time. So the folks we're recommending to be vaccinated right now are anyone who has exposure, a contact with someone who may have been confirmed to have monkeypox. And so that could be family members. It could be other close contacts.
She says even children are not immune from getting the disease. She says between 80 and 90 cases of monkeypox in children have been reported in several countries, mostly in households where someone was infected. The monkeypox virus is spread from person to person through close bodily contact. It can cause a range of symptoms, including painful sores. Those at highest risk for the disease or complications include women who are pregnant, children, and people who are immunocompromised. European countries have the highest number of confirmed cases. Although monkeypox is endemic in Africa, where it has been present since 1970, the reported caseload is relatively low. For example, Nigeria reports 101 cases, and the Democratic Republic of Congo has confirmed 163 cases out of more than 2,000 suspected cases. Lewis says the number of suspected cases in the DRC is high because the country's ability to confirm cases through laboratory testing is limited. She says testing needs to be supported and ramped up.
Suspected cases may be other things. They may be even measles, they may be chickenpox. There's no vaccine for chickenpox being used in that environment. So it is critically important to support countries to access testing. That's one of the most important things that WHO is trying to do right now. But at the same time, in the global reports, what we're reporting are confirmed and probable cases.
For now, no travel-related monkeypox restrictions are in place. However, the WHO recommends anyone with signs or symptoms compatible with the monkeypox virus should avoid travel and isolate for the duration of the illness. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Mudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only